Gentlemen, we went over the rules in the dressing room. I want to caution you to keep this fight clean at all times, and what I say, you must obey.
Live from the WKOM studio in downtown Columbia, it's time to wake up and get woke. It's Three Dudes with a View.
Let's get it all!
Good Monday morning, folks. My name is Del Kennedy. I am dude number three. Welcome in, Three Dudes with a View. Oh, it's a crisp Monday morning. I noticed that the red buds bloomed over the weekend. It's going down to 25 tonight. Unfortunately, though, back up to 57 tomorrow. But we're in that dangerous time when things bud and bloom. And then if they get a really hard freeze, it gets cold, it stays cold, then there goes the fruits and the nuts and the flowers and everything else. Seth's over there nodding his head. Seth Campbell, good morning. Rick, good to have you.
Hey, it's good to be here. You know, I'm it's kind of a surprise entry on here this morning, but I'm happy to be here, and I'm fired up and ready to go.
Yeah, Seth Campbell, folks, teacher at Mount Pleasant High School. He takes the Miss York Democratic point of view, and when we can get him, we're delighted to have him. But he does live out in the country, and when I started talking about what might happen to these trees and flowers that have already bloomed, he was over there nodding his head.
Yeah, if you have anything bloom, you know, maybe you put a sheet over it tonight or something. I've done that many times, so you don't lose your blooms. But what do you say, 25?
25, but it's going to straight back up to 57 tomorrow. So
yeah, I'll be out there with old sheets trying to save the blooms I have.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully, sometime you can survive just a really short, hard dip.
Mm-hmm.
It's when it gets cold and stays cold this time of year that you may lose your entire fruit and nut crop, a lot of flowers, a lot of blooms, that kind of thing. All right, dude number two, Clayton Harris, good morning.
Good morning, Dale. Good morning, everybody.
Dude number one, Mr. Jim York, how are you?
Good morning, Dylan. I'm here.
You're there. All right. And regular special guest dude on Monday, my colleague for 25 years in the U.S. Attorney's Office. We worked on many cases together. But he takes the Mr. York left point of view as well. Good morning, Mike Roden.
Good morning, everybody. We had the Ides of March last week. Did you note that?
No, I did not.
The Ides of March, that's the day where you have to avoid backstabbing senators. Or any senators, for that matter, probably should avoid.
Well, you know, somehow in my Latin classes years ago, I remember something about the Ides of March, but I can't remember exactly what.
That's when they stabbed Caesar.
Yeah, Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
Beware the Ides of March.
Yeah, beware the Ides of March.
All right, so. We got through.
Et tu, Brutus.
Et tu, Brutus. We got through that, and I'm looking forward to some March Madness coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's coming quick. All right, Clayton and I are surrounded by liberals today, and that's all right. We'll survive.
We promise it won't be a bloodbath.
Well, it may be in the auto industry, but that's most ridiculous.
Just something else to freak out on.
It was Saturday, and the liberal media's freak out over Trump on Saturday was bloodbath. Today it'll be something else. You know.
Well, here's my question.
It doesn't work. It doesn't help. And their mischaracterization of what he said only serves to bolster his support.
Well, let me ask this question. Why can't we make EVs here? Why do we have to import them from China? Is that what they were saying?
Well, out of Mexico, Chinese plants in Mexico was his point. I mean, I think it was poor verbiage at the, you know, but Meet the Press played the whole clip, Delk. I mean, they played the whole clip, and you could clearly tell what he was talking about. I just think it was a poor word choice by someone who's already constantly accused of making such.
Yeah, it's all right. But what he was talking about is the, what's this Chinese EV maker, the one everybody says is the best?
Someone opening plants down in Mexico. I don't know the name.
They're the only one that people who seem to know anything about it cite as a Tesla beater. It's a Chinese firm called EB or ET. I can't remember what it is. But they're the only one that, you know, if you read, you know, the Wall Street Journal or whatever, they seem to cite them as competitive with Tesla. Nobody else seems to be able to catch up with Tesla. And they are apparently, if they import these cars directly from China, there's a substantial tariff on them. But if they are in the process right now of building these very large plants, manufacturing plants for these electric vehicles, this Chinese firm in Mexico. Now, because Mexico is part of the North American Free Trade Agreement, they can bring these
vehicles into the United States free of tariffs. So that's, you know, so I don't, I'm not in depth on this issue, but so far as I know, the Biden administration is not doing anything about that, about these EV plants in Mexico. I don't know what they could do exactly. So, you know, I'll give it that.
It's just a Trump ploy to try to pull UAW workers toward him. That's all it is.
Yeah, my point
well,
is.
Well, but what, why is this point not valid, Mr. York?
Well, you can't stop Mexico from importing plants and making vehicles.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean,
and that sort of dovetails with my point. My point is, why does this necessarily have to be a bad thing for the auto industry here in America? We can make EVs. We do make EVs, but we can compete with them. We can you know, use our technology to outpace them. And look, you may not like EVs right now, but I think they are the future, and they're going to improve. There's problems with them, but I think it's just going to get better, like any other technology. One day we're going to extract the last drop of oil from the earth, not in our lifetimes probably, but eventually that's going to happen. And we need to be prepared for that. We need to sort of ease into that. And, you know, and of course, it's better for the environment as well. So EVs are the future. I just think we just need to, you know, continue to develop the technology, and we can do that here in America.
Well,
any nation needs a contingency plan to deal with transportation of its citizens.
Well, there seems to be the nub of the issue, Mike, and I think what your assumption is and the Biden administration's assumption is that American companies, Chrysler, Ford, General Motors, whoever, can competitively make EVs. It's becoming increasing. You know, I, of course, my source is usually the Wall Street Journal. It's becoming increasingly evident that American car companies, with the exception of Tesla, nobody's going to be able to catch Tesla. They can make them cheaper, faster, better than anybody else in the U.S. And, you know, Ford's already scaling back Blue Oval. I keep asking people if they've seen, you know, the EV that they're supposed to be making in Spring Hill is the Cadillac Lyriq. I keep asking people if they've seen one on a dealer lot anywhere. And so far as I know, nobody has. And they've been saying they're delivering them for 3 or 4 years now. Now, I would love to hear if there's one on a lot somewhere, if there are deliveries being made. But and they said that Ford, on every 150 Lightning Ford EV last year, Ford lost, what, Clayton, $85,000 or $100,000, something like that.
Yeah, well, wasn't good.
So there's a fundamental assumption there, you know, of whether or not American car companies can compete in the EV market, can catch up with Tesla, or can catch up with this Chinese company, BD, maybe, ED, EB. And by all business accounts that I read, they cannot. These people are so far out ahead that they've mastered the technology, the manufacturing process, that nobody's going to be able to catch them. So they're and that may be what Trump's actually saying, is that the Biden administration is asleep at the wheel on this, and he implies that he's got something that he could do about these massive.
Like what?
Only he can fix it.
Only he can fix it.
All right, now just
politics.
Folks.
That's politics.
Before we get it, I hate Trump though. I mean, he did renegotiate NAFTA in his first term, and the Biden administration has not sought to undo. That's one of the few Trump things they have not sought to undo.
Yeah.
They seem to be very happy with what Trump did on NAFTA, and so maybe Trump's suggesting. I think that he is suggesting that something else needs to be done about NAFTA and those Mexican automobile plants, those Mexican Chinese automobile plants in Mexico. Go ahead, Clayton.
All right. He said he was going to put 100% tariff on those specific vehicles that they're making in Mexico.
Well, that would do it.
I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that when he used the phrase bloodbath, that's what he was referring to. Maybe he doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt, given his past history, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. But in the same speech, he also said that some immigrants were not people. They were animals.
Yeah,
he said that.
That's a troublesome phrase, to say the least. And then in a speech last night, I understand, I saw this in the news this morning.
I don't know about last night.
He said that somewhere else, he said that the January 6th committee members should be in jail. So,
for a man who's got immigrant wives and four children from immigrants, that's kind of down and out. Don't you think so? Yeah.
Well, it's obvious that the January 6th, I don't know if they...
He's probably talking about... For withholding evidence.
They've obviously suborned perjury. They've also obstructed justice by hiding evidence on their
just
way out.
Just because you didn't like the testimony doesn't mean it was perjury.
Well, they have suborned perjury because what's been revealed since is that the witnesses made statements to the contrary as they tried to hide and delete a whole bunch of evidence that they didn't want anybody to see after the Republicans won the majority. That's obstruction of justice. What was revealed in those documents was that some witnesses had suborned perjury. Now, those are crimes. They'll never be held accountable. They're not in what Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney are not in Congress anymore. Liz Cheney, I mean, the ice cream delivery guy out here in Woodland Park's more relevant in politics than Liz Cheney these days. And so, yeah.
I don't believe that.
He's playing to his base. If he's going to have these huge rallies with thousands of people, that's what they want to hear, and he's just telling them what they want to hear.
He does get them charged.
I think, you know, we're several months out from an election. If I was advising him, I'd tell him to moderate some and track more independents, you know, instead of playing the classic hits to your base. But he's playing the classic hits to his base, and this is what got him in trouble last time.
He already said he didn't want any voters from Nikki Haley's camp.
He doesn't seem to want the votes of independents. He doubles down, triples down.
Nikki Haley's not an independent. She's a warmonger. This just in. Climate experts have raised the alarm after an event that has never been seen just occurred. According to the expert familiar with the story, a cloud spontaneously turned into a destructive cyclone due to changes in atmospheric pressure, apparently brought on by the ice caps melting because of the boiling oceans, which caused all of the beaches to disappear, pushing more cows inland, concentrating their farts into a localized area.
Satire. Okay, made me go in there for a minute. Yeah. And then I think when you got to the cows, I was thinking, this is pushing the cows
inland from the beach.
Yeah.
You know, I love those scenes of those French farmers taking those huge water cannons and spraying down the French government buildings with cow manure.
That would be so much fun
to see in Washington, D.C.
The French don't mess around when it comes to their government. They speak up. The French government suggested, I think, cutting back on some of or increasing the hours, I think, the mandatory work week, and they rioted in the streets. I mean, you know, so I kind of tip my hat to the French. They're taking on the nose a lot sometimes for, you know, their lack of aggression, perhaps during the two world wars. But they make their government responsive to them, and so I tip my hat to them.
I mean, what a great form of peaceful protest: spraying down the government, spraying down government buildings with cow manure. We got to get our farmers, you know, on the go and motivated, get them to D.C. with big loads of manure. All right. We're about out of here.
Holes.
Hey, folks, we're going to talk. John Ray Clemens, folks, who. Most famously around here is the one Scott Spicky had the spat with, we're not going to talk about that. I mean, we can, but what Seth Campbell has invited John Ray Clements on to do is talk about vouchers.
Yeah, it's in committee today. You know, there's more votes coming today before it goes to a full House vote, so we need to talk about it some more, I think, before they vote on this bad bill.
Right, and of course, Senator Clemens, right?
Representative
Clemens. He's opposed to the voucher bill, and so we're going to let that point of view get out there. All right, take a break and come back.
Sales is our area's premier GMC dealership. Their lot at 919 Nashville Highway has an impressive selection of GMC vehicles, trucks from the light-duty GMC Canyon to the Sierra 3500 Heavy Duty, and everything in between. GMC's SUVs are impressive with the Terrain, Acadia, and Yukon. Want luxury? Ask about Denali upgrades. Go to parksmotorsales.com for information and see their awesome offers and services. Parks Motor Sales GMC. We are professional grade.
Deciding what your next home will look like, cost and construction, or timing can be intimidating. At The Way Realty, our licensed general contractors help take the fear out of home building by walking you through the step-by-step process of estimating the cost and designing the look that you desire. You can even stay in your house until your new house is finished. Do you have a family farm or a piece of land you would like to build on? Our prices start at $195 a square foot and include brick and nice finishes. Come by our office and see what we can do for you at 800 Hatcher Lane in Columbia, or call us at 931-580-4669.
Hello, I'm Barbara Lincoln with Holland's Pharmacy. You may have heard our previous commercials about compression hosiery that we carry at Holland's Pharmacy. Well, we've recently expanded into a full line of knee braces, back, wrist, ankle, and other support wear. We will gladly help you get just the right fit for these items and, of course, special order items to ensure the proper fit. Come see us at Holland's Pharmacy, 1608 Hatcher Lane, or call us at 931-388-4233. 388-4233.
Hi, this is Steve, the garbage man. Y'all have heard me talk in the past about Packer, our mascot dog. Well, I have some sad news about Packer. She recently crossed over the Rainbow Bridge to join our other beloved pets of the past. Packer lived out her final days on our farm in Water Valley. She had a great 14 years of life after being rescued by Don from being thrown away as a pup in someone's garbage. Rest in peace, Packer.
American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning is built to a higher standard, so you can focus on the problems in your life that actually matter, like the stair that only creaks when everyone else in the house is asleep. American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, built to a higher standard.
Call Davis Heating and Cooling at 931-388-2090. Davis Heating and Cooling is your local American Standard dealer and proudly serves the Maury County area. Find Davis Heating and Cooling online and on Facebook, or call today, 388-2090.
Hi, this is Dr. Tui from the Dr. Gill Center. Has your back been bothering you for years? Can't play golf, pick up the grandkids, garden or exercise? Tried everything and nothing works? Call the Dr. Gill Center. We have successfully helped tens of thousands of patients in Middle Tennessee, and you could be next. Call 615-880-9774 and ask about our $49 special. That's 615-880-9774. Because back pain doesn't need to be a way of life. Call me, painfree.com.
For 40 years, the Jewelers Bench has worked hard for their customers and provided the highest quality jewelry at the best price. They keep going back. Recent renovations have allowed them to expand their inventory. More high-quality jewelry, custom vintage and estate pieces, and professional jewelry and watch repairs. They also buy gold. The Jewelers Bench. Still here, still great service. 808 Trotwood Avenue, Columbia.
Hello, my name is Connor Mims. My wife Bradley and I live in Columbia, Tennessee in Riverside. I am a deck and porch builder, and my wife is a second grade teacher at Riverside Elementary. My specialty is designing and building elegant and comfortable porches and decks. Let me work with you to design and build the porch or deck of your dreams. Give us a call today from our website, MimsModernLandscape.com. That's MimsModernLandscape.com, and check out what we have to offer. Thanks.
The generations that have paved the way for us deserve respect, integrity, and compassion. This is Kelly Dobson, owner of Caring Hearts Home Healthcare. My grandmother and mother started this business in 2005, and I was honored to take over in 2012. Licensed and insured, we help our aging community stay in the comfort of their own homes. Online at CaringHeartsHomeHealthcareLLC.com, by phone 931-381-5470, or in person at 1121 Trotwood Avenue here in Columbia. That's Caring Hearts Home Healthcare.
Hey, this is Seth Moss at Tennessee Valley Equipment, a premier FAE PrimeTech, Bandit, and Shurex dealer. We are your dealer for all of your land clearing and forestry mulching needs. We sell equipment, provide repair service, and parts along with a rental fleet of mulching equipment. We also offer mulching teeth, blades, and sharpening. Our number one priority is getting you up and running as quickly and affordable as possible. Tennessee Valley is located at 300 Santa Fe Pike in wonderful Columbia, Tennessee. Stop by or give us a call today at 931-981-9812.
Life gets busy, and sometimes slowing down to buy your family quality food can seem impossible. This is Terry Taylor with Taylor Family Farm, and we offer local home delivery in addition to our local drop locations to help with that problem. Now you can get your favorite pastured poultry, pork, and grass-fed beef delivered right to your door. Visit TaylorFamilyFarmTN.com to find out how. We believe in healthy food, healthy people, and healthy community at Taylor Family Farm.
The Mules are back in town. For nearly 50 years, Mule Day funds have supported local schools, civic organizations, and improvements at the Maury County Park. Now Mule Day is working to positively impact the lives of young people in Maury County with the Mule Day Works Scholarship. Encourage young people to apply online at muleday.com/works or check it out to see how you can help support career and technical education in Maury County. Support Mule Day Works by attending Mule Day April 4th through the 7th. Visit muleday.com/works. That's muleday.com/works.
Dude number three, I am Del Kennedy. Dude number two, Clayton Harris. Good morning.
Good morning, Del. Good morning, everybody.
Dude number one, Mr. Jim York. How are you?
Good morning, Del. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. All right. Now, we're surrounded by liberals today. Seth Campbell, teacher of Mount Pleasant High, guest whenever we can get him. Welcome back, Seth.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
And Mike Roden, my colleague, 25 years in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Nashville. Good friend, good lawyer. Welcome back, Mike Roden.
Good morning, everybody.
All right, now we are going to have Representative, what's his name, folks? I'm believing.
John Ray Clements.
John Ray Clements is going to, he should be coming in a few minutes. And Seth invited him to come on the show to talk about vouchers. And I suspect that's going to be in opposition to vouchers, Seth, correct?
For sure. You know, there's two bills, and he might go on top of it. He might rehash this, but there's two bills right now. There's a Senate bill and a House bill.
They
are very different. And the House bill right now, championed by our friend Representative Sapicki, is the cost has ballooned up to nearly $500 million by year two. $500 million. And this bill isn't. I think it's safe to say it's not popular. I think everyone in this room, including Mr. York, I think they're against the bill, albeit for different reasons, for vastly different reasons, but they're against the bill.
I'm not going to say I'm against it, but I'm...
Would you vote for the bill?
Oh, if I were actually a legislator? Uh-huh. That's more complicated, Seth.
You've had cause for concern with the bill, correct?
I mean, and just, you know, if I'm talking to my wife, I'd probably say, you know, I don't like this thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I think that constitutes her against it, but I understand your point.
If you're a legislator, and Scotch is, politics is messy, legislation is messy. And
agreed.
And when I'm not going to disagree with Scott in his assessment as to what's best for his district and what his district wants. I think that's the equation for Scott, and I have to respect that. All right, John Ray Clements, can you hear us?
Connecting.
Representative John Clements, can you hear us?
I can. How you doing?
Good morning. Thanks for coming on. You're down here in Maury County, Tennessee, and we've got you in on Zoom. We'd love to have you in the studios or come visit us anytime. Do you know who is on with you?
I do not.
Okay, I'm going to go around the room then. For the show, the format of the show is Three Dudes with a View, and the three dudes are myself, Clayton Harris. Clayton, say good morning. John Ray Clements.
Good morning, sir.
We're the conservatives. The progressive liberal point of view is Mr. Jim York. Good morning, Mr. York.
Good morning, Mr. Clements.
Morning, sir.
All right. Now, to help them out, though, of course, Seth Campbell invited you on, and Seth's a regular guest on our show. Seth takes the progressive point of view, and you already know Seth.
Well, we've met at the EC meetings before. Good morning, Representative Clements.
And,
good morning. How you doing?
Mike Roden is on with us as well, Representative Clements. He was my colleague in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Nashville for 25 years. We're good friends. We work together on, I'd say we're veterans of many wars, domestic and foreign, in terms of litigation. But Mike's always had
had the picture of every Democratic president from Roosevelt forward on his wall. So we're having a progressive Democratic Party this morning, and glad to do it.
Good morning, sir.
Well, I have to say the only president I have on a picture on my wall is Teddy Roosevelt, so it's a Republican, so go figure.
All right.
Teddy would be a liberal Democrat today, I'm afraid.
Yes, he would.
I do.
Well, I'm not afraid. I'm sure of it.
I do think we can all agree on something, though, this morning.
What's that?
Well, I think we'll talk about it here in a second.
Tell us why that voucher bill is so bad, yeah, Representative Clemens.
Yeah, Representative Clemens, I'm going to let Seth advise you on it, and I'm going to let him lead the conversation assume if Seth wants to talk about vouchers.
That's what I want, because it's going to it's in committee today, correct?
It's in Government Ops Committee in the House.
Okay. And it's coming to a head, and it's been pushed down here by Representative Sapicki for months, and I think it's a bad bill. I think they're dressing this expensive bad bill up with as many frills as they can to make it palatable for the constituents. And I just want you to tell us what you think about the bill, looking for another perspective, because I've been rallying against this bill. I'm a public school teacher for months. I just think it's bad legislation, and I think they're putting everything on it to make it more palatable. And and it's ballooned to almost $500 million by year two. I just want to know your take on it and get some more details on it from someone like you.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your attention to this issue. This is one of those issues that shouldn't know any political party. I mean, this is just such a bad idea and so destructive to public education that you're seeing opposition to it from both sides of the aisle. And the fact that it has all these bells and whistles hung on it, or Christmas ornaments, as we call them these days, it tells you exactly how bad of an idea it is. Several of us have been introducing legislation to do the exact same they're trying to decorate this voucher deal with for years, and they've been defeating it. And now they want to say they want to pass it for those very same things. But they've had to decorate it with all those bells and whistles to try to get votes, because they didn't think they had the votes to get out of the subcommittee. And then so the next committee they need to get it out of, they'll put something else on it. So, look, vouchers, I mean, they are fiscally irresponsible. They're inequitable, and they won't do anything but serve to destroy public education in the state of Tennessee. You're going to have rural communities are going to pay for them, but they're not going to benefit from them. You're going to have most what we see in other states is a high percentage of those who use the vouchers already attend private school. So they're essentially just a bonus payment for the families to pay off their Beamer note for a month or two for their kid when they're already going to private school. And I've heard from private schools that say, well, look, I mean, if they're going to make them universal, we're just going to increase tuition by $7,000 a year. Take that extra money. Parents aren't going to know, you know, have to pay anything else. So, you know, in reality, it's just bad every which way. I'm happy to talk about it more in depth. I mean, there's nothing good or positive about a private school voucher in this situation.
I know that. I mean, I clearly agree with you. I think, you know, we were saying in this room, people are against the bill, albeit for different reasons, maybe not against it, but hesitant to support the bill for my conservative friends over here. Mr. York, you got any questions for Representative Clemens?
Yeah, Representative Clemens, what's the accountability of, if this bill were to pass, what type of accountability is held for the private schools?
None. I mean, that's yet another issue. And well, let's be clear. There's three different versions of this bill. There's the governor's version, there's the Senate version, and then there's the House version. The House version is the one that I'm discussing that has all the bells and whistles on it and has a significant fiscal note. They're all going to have significant fiscal notes and cost the state billions of dollars a year. It's just going to balloon from this get-go. But only one of those versions has any accountability in it. And all the sides have their heels dug in on this bill. But ultimately, if we pass this universal voucher bill, there's going to be no accountability for private schools. They're not going to have to be on the same playing field at all with public schools. that they're being compared to here unfairly.
Now that the House version does this, Del Kennedy again, Representative. The House version does require that the private schools do these standardized testing that the public schools are required to do. That's some level of accountability, is it not?
Well, that'll get yanked out, I can tell you right now. It's the only thing really in there with any accountability metrics, because private schools don't want to have to administer those tests. Right now, the limited pilot program, the effects of which we've yet to see. I mean, we've got some private schools already complaining about having to administer these tests, and they're having to bring in consultants just to administer them who have taught in public school before. So I can tell you the first thing that gets yanked out of there is any testing requirements.
Okay. What may actually get passed, as you've noted, is way up in the air. You got three different versions. You got committees to go. So what if anything gets passed? We just don't know what that is yet. I understand. Go ahead.
We really don't have any idea.
Yeah, go ahead. I understand you've had a pilot program. Now, where is your district, Representative?
My district is here wholly within Davidson County, so it was the initial area for the pilot program.
Right. You've had a pilot program in your district for vouchers. Can you give us any examples, good or bad, as to how that's worked out?
Well, it's all anecdotal. We don't have any data. I mean, that's the other problem here is we don't know how beneficial or imperfect this program has been. And that was the promise that was made by Governor Billy when he passed it. Hey, we're going to do this. We don't have any plans of expanding it. We just want to see if this is beneficial to anybody. And here we are, just a couple of years later, expanding it universally. They pushed it to Hamilton County, I guess, last year, in addition to Davidson and Shelby. We have no real data to show any benefits or anything from this Tennessee type of plan. What we do have is plenty of data from other states that show they have no improved educational outcomes. There's no improvement in test scores to speak of. And it's just costing the states a whole bunch of money. Look, ultimately, this thing's being pushed by this false narrative of choice, parental choice or this. Nobody has choice in this equation but the private schools who choose to accept or reject these students. And they don't have to, they don't have to take on a student if they don't want them to. Maybe they'll take them on if they're a great athlete or something. I don't know. They come in there under the pilot program. They sign this contract. They sign their rights away to the federal protections and the IEP and things like that. It's really concerning. I mean, that accountability component is key on multiple levels. The lack of data should concern everybody. The fact that we're willing to throw a couple billion dollars at a program with no data to support any proved educational improvement or outcomes is really concerning.
Have you had any constituents? Seth, go ahead.
I was just gonna piggyback on that and ask if these private schools accept the coupon, I'll put it that way. Do they have to? They don't have to serve students with disabilities, do they?
No, they don't have to accept anybody that they don't want to. And look, most of these schools up here, I mean, not in my district, but the private schools in Nashville, I mean, these are $40,000 plus fees. So, I mean, what kind of real option is this making for the children that Bill Lee's professing to want to help? Or I guess Scott's probably talking about that as well down there. But look, they can take whoever they want into their school and reject everybody else.
Representative Clemens, you just touched on something that concerns me. They talk about providing the $7,000 voucher, but that's just part of educating the kid in private schools. There are additional fees that parents have to provide in order to educate that child. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. So you don't really have any guarantee of anything aside from that just basic $7,000 coupon. You got fees, you got transportation issues, you got extracurriculars, you got all these different things that are tacked on top of that tuition. Now, look, I mean, that's a big concern here is what you see in other states. You've seen these fly-by-night schools come in, set up shop, You know, and they miraculously, their tuition is the exact same cost as the voucher program. You know, it's kind of like some of these charter schools come in and they're really hedge fund property investments. They're coming in here to make an investment to tap into that public money, to profit off of it and not really providing any true educational environment or benefit to the children they profess to serve.
Have you had any
another issue?
Oh, go ahead, Ms. Shore.
Another issue is the fact that Tennessee is supposed to try to be improving public education, and then we come in here with a voucher program to take funds away from public education. Does that make any kind of sense?
Well, I appreciate the softball, but none of this makes any fiscal sense, Jim. I mean, this is all backwards. I mean, TASER, which, as you know, is an independent commission up here of the state to investigate stuff. 2019, they released their report that we're underfunding our public school system across Tennessee to the tune of $2 billion per year. Underfunding in public education to by $2 billion per year. And you know, now we've spent some more money over the past few years. We've invested in our public schools, but we've also created a funding formula that facilitates the flow of that increase in funding back into private hands. And that isn't even referring to the voucher program. That's simply referring to the TESA funding formula that facilitates the flow of money outside of our traditional public schools into charter schools that the governor really backs, these religious-based charter schools.
You're talking about now, funding that follows the child.
Yeah, that's the narrative that they use. But right, the reason they wanted that is because they, you know, the whole thing, look, over the last decade, they have been doing everything possible to try to reduce public confidence in our local public schools. That you've had, you know, this accusations of brainwashing. You've had the CRT debate. You've had the book bans. You've had all this other nonsense going on, trying to reduce confidence in our public schools to get parents to question the issue just enough to make them look for an alternative. Well, unfortunately, as the SCORE is this group that funnels money into the state through the Gates Foundation and through these other school privatization organizations. SCORE, started by former Senator Bill Frist, found this up, and they just ran a poll a couple years ago that said, look, Tennesseans strongly support and love their public schools. More, the favorability of public schools on that poll ranks higher than magnet schools, private schools, charter schools, everything. And so regardless of all these attempts to destroy public confidence in our public schools, people across Tennessee still love their local public school.
Amen.
Overwhelmingly.
Amen. Amen. I mean, I'm sorry to jump in. I just say our representative, yeah, and I'm not throwing him under the bus. He knows how I feel. You know, he championed the third grade and now fourth grade retention laws. He was at the charter. You know, he's a big proponent of bringing charter schools to Maury County, and now he's big on the voucher programs. I just feel like we're being undercut in Columbia by our representative. Public schools are being undercut at every turn.
Well, I mean, when you look at what they've done to reduce confidence in our public schools, and they fail to fully fund the public schools to the tune of, I mean, even TASER points this out, and now we're creating a TESA program that funnels money out of the school to the tune of whatever the average is in Maury County. Let's say it's $10,500. $10,500 walks out that school system every time a child leaves. If you open a 300-seat charter elementary school, multiply 300 times 10,000, and that's how much walks out of your LEA into an unregulated charter school. And yet your public school still has that capital overhead. It still has all those expenses behind. Now take vouchers and put it on top of that. Well, vouchers are going to have a fiscal note associated with them. As you pointed out earlier, you're talking about $500 million, and it's only going to balloon from there. Look at other states like Arizona, that the entire state's in the red now because of the voucher program they passed. So then you take that cost of that, but then you have to subtract whatever the value is of that child in the public school under TESA. Let's say it's $10,000. If they choose that voucher, they're going to get that $7,000 voucher, but that public school also loses that $10,000. So you get a double whammy on the same bad idea. And so all this stuff fits together. All these small puzzle pieces that they put together over the last 10 years are fitting together, ultimately going to destroy public education in the state of Tennessee. I know it sounds hyperbolic.
It does.
When you sit down and do the math, there is no other conclusion. And that's why you've seen county commission after county commission, school board after school board across the state of Tennessee pass resolutions opposing vouchers. It's because the local governments do the math. They know exactly how much money they need to operate the public school system, which generally is the largest employer and one of the largest budget items in every county. So all this stuff we're doing up here, these guys love to throw around money. They love to, you know, say, oh, we're cutting this tax, we're eliminating this, we're going to eliminate this fee. Well, guess what? All this flows downhill. Who's picking up the tab? Your local governments. So after they passed TISA, I said, look, every county in the state's going to have to raise property taxes in the next 4 years. It's guaranteed. Vouchers will now just take that property tax that we're going to have to pass and exponentially increase it. So when your counties, when Murray County gets hit with another will tax, property tax increase proposal, you're going to know who to thank.
Why are these?
Okay,
why
I'm not
are
sure
these,
I connect. Go ahead, Seth.
Well, I was
go
just
going
to say, why are these representatives not listening to their local office holders, their local stakeholders? I know Representative Sapicki said he hadn't heard from anybody against it in the community. I don't know if I believe that, but why? You know, I know Murphy.
Seth, you don't have any cause not to believe that.
I've spoke to him.
Yeah, he's heard from you.
That's true. Okay.
But I'm sure that people have reached out to him. There's a whole Facebook group dealt against it. But
there is opposition.
There's opposition.
It's not Republican opposition. I mean, Democrat opposition.
Public poll a few weeks ago that showed that almost 80% of the state does not want this.
Yeah, I mean
that's
so. Why? And that leads to my point, Clayton, is that why are these representatives continuing to push it after their school boards, their superintendents, their mayors, the constituents are saying we don't want it? Are they being forced by Speaker Sexton and Governor Lee? Is the pressure on?
There's always a conspiracy out there. You know, Mike, you had a question.
I had two questions. I think he touched on one because you mentioned Arizona. My question was whether or not we had any data from other states who have tried a similar thing to Governor Lee's proposal, and if so, what are the results of that?
Yeah, so, I mean, other states have got voucher proposals, Wisconsin, Arizona, you know, Arkansas just passed a version, so it's too early to tell what's going on over there, and some other states have it. What we have seen across the board is no improvement in educational outcomes. In fact, in some states, we've seen a decrease in testing scores. So, you know, again, it just leaves you kind of scratching your head to Seth's point, like what's driving this? What is the real reason for this? And look, I've got several theories I can speculate. I mean, but with him, with to Seth's question, which is fair, the issue is, I can just tell you, having served up here, it's my 10th year, there is a lack of accountability. These guys with whom I serve, these men and women with whom I serve, come to Nashville, and they think what happens in Nashville stays in Nashville. And in large part, it does, because, you know, there is very little local press these days statewide. The hometown newspapers are a thing of the past, and, you know, nobody's really paying attention to anything. There's only the press pool up here. The press corps is pretty small, and most of the stories get syndicated. So, look, the stories you get, you know, my colleagues that drive 4 or 5 hours every week come up here. The only stories their constituents get are the big items, you know, whatever is a knee-jerk kind of issue that might get clicks or it might be a big story, and we all know what those issues are, and that's what get covered. But meanwhile, we're voting on 100 bills a day up here sometimes between our subcommittees and our committees and the House floor, and there's a ton of really bad stuff in there that people never hear about or know how bad it is and how it's going to directly impact them one way or another.
Well,
and so I would argue that my colleagues have gotten away with a lot up here that has done direct harm to their constituents, and nobody knows about it. So they're not held accountable. So now I can tell you that Scott Sapicki and some of these others, they feel somewhat invincible, guys. I mean, they feel like this is just yet another thing that's going to heat up. You know, the temperature, the knob's going to get turned up to 11. and then people are going to forget by November.
Well, I mean,
that's you know, generally how they feel.
Representative, if you get out here to Maury County, you're sitting on a whole different planet. I mean, 2 weeks ago in the Maury County Democratic Party, Joe Biden got 962 votes. No, you know, this is a different part of the world entirely.
But only
47 miles away from Nashville. But and so, yes, Representative Speckie is entitled to feel emboldened because he is supported by 70, 80, 90% of his district.
But anytime he faces a primary challenger, he loses 45%.
Well,
I mean, Seth, so it's not.
Seth, we're just red as you can possibly get. And so there's no reason not to represent that. No, but what I want to ask,
what Representative Clemens is talking about is all the bad legislation that's being passed up in Nashville, and the local people don't know about.
Well, and my response to that is exactly right. We don't know about it. But Representative Clemens, while we got you, I want to keep this on vouchers and let you make the case so people can understand what the other side's saying about it. Have you had anybody, your constituents, you've had that pilot program in your district, have you had a constituent one way or the other come to you and say, you know, Representative, this voucher thing really is a screw-up, it hurts my child, or Representative, this voucher thing has really helped my child? Have you had any of that feedback from your constituents?
No, I haven't. I haven't had any feedback, and I don't – use of the voucher program is so low here in Davidson County, even with all the different private schools here in the county, that I've yet to hear anybody who has used it, praise it, or oppose it.
Is it universally available in your district?
Yeah. I mean, you have to fit within the financial parameters, but it's available to anyone to use it, and the take up is so low on it. I don't know why I haven't heard from anybody, but I haven't heard from anybody that it's great or bad.
That surprises me. I would have thought that, you know, if it's available to everybody, that there'd be a larger percentage that would take up on it. What do you have any theories as to why that might be?
Well, because people love their public schools. Look, you know, MNPS, you know, as opposed to what Scott Sapicki told me on the House floor of the day, our public schools are not crappy. You know, and I'm using a PG term, you know, our schools don't suck, as he said. He even came up here and asked for a tour of our public schools. I don't know. He and they gave him one of multiple of our high schools. I guess he didn't see what he wanted to see or expected to see. But in Nashville, just like across the entire state of Tennessee, people love their local public schools and they're invested in them. And yeah, we have some options. We have some charters in my district, and some people like those charters. And those charters are actually, one of them was probably the most successful in the state of Tennessee on educational outcomes. But people aren't looking for an alternative, despite the effort to turn people against public schools and traditional public schools. It's not working. Number one issue, and the reason I say this, is, look, Maury County is a different world, and it is, I guess, as you describe it, red. But look, the number one issue on every political poll I've ever seen, and I've been in and around Tennessee politics since the mid-90s, less than most of you guys, but every poll I've ever seen, public education is the number one issue on every poll. Education, no, hands down, far and away. And so when you look at somebody in office who has done nothing but attack public schools, who has done nothing but harm public schools,
now, that, are you naming names here?
They should be held accountable for that. Well, look, I mean, the third grade retention bill. I mean, how bad of an idea was that? And I
terrible.
Can say that I was one of only two people in the House to vote against it when it came back from the conference committee. And look, it was a terrible idea then. TISA is a terrible idea that undermines our public schools. Look at all the stuff that's been passed. Look, this isn't red or blue. This is the heart and soul of every community, public schools.
Couple questions, though.
And when you attack public schools, you should be held accountable.
Well,
I agree.
I mean, I will agree with that last statement that your public schools are the heart and soul of the community.
Yes.
With that, I think we can find agreement.
But if I understood you correctly, you said that TISA, that the legislature has pumped a large amount of money into the public school system statewide in the last few years, and you had no argument with that. It's the TISA formula where the funds follow the child. That's where you have the agreement, not with the funding levels.
Well, I still have issues with the funding levels because our schools were so far underfunded that anything we've put on it now is scratching the surface. Now, look, I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean, that's positive. I support increased funding for our public schools. We need to be doing a lot more. But why aren't we taking the $1 billion we want to invest in a voucher program? We might as well be dropping Tiffany's coupons over Bell Mead up here in Nashville. Why don't we take that money and invest it in our public schools get us up to the level where we should be, to provide the basic level of funding for our public schools. This is constitutionally required. This isn't some, left-wing conspiracy. We're supposed to provide free public schools to students across the state of Tennessee that benefit everybody.
I will agree.
You want to plateau the prosperity of this state? You want to plateau the economic prosperity of Tennessee? Destroy public education. And that's what they're doing.
I will agree that public schools are the heart and soul of each of our communities. There's no doubt about that. Now, another thing you said, though, in your district, you've had this pilot program. I don't know how long, and I think in and around Nashville, there've been the big ticket schools. My daughter went to Harpeth Hall. I mean, those are prohibitively expensive, and I can't see Harpeth Hall accepting these vouchers anyway. But you do have a number of smaller Christian academies up there who are not nearly as so expensive. And you said you had several of them, if not many of them, in your district. Yet with universal vouchers available, hardly anybody's taken the bait. Nobody's used them. So is that evidence that, heck, nobody's going to use these things anyway? So why bother?
Well, this proposal is a little bit different. I mean, you're expanding the applicant pool for these vouchers, and now it's basically free money. It's open to anybody. I mean, you can make up to 500% of federal poverty level of a family of four and take a voucher. I mean, that's much different than the pilot program.
But hadn't that been the case in your district for I don't know how many years?
No, the limit on that, the income level is much, much lower. And this has opened it up to a much wider pool of people, and it's making it universal. So basically, if you want, you get $7,000, you can do whatever you want with it. And then you can use it for almost anything you want to as well.
All right.
Free money for a lot of these families.
We got a hard break, and we're over here in about 90 seconds to 2 minutes. So you Democrats, Mike, Mr. York, Seth, y'all get the last word.
One question. You mentioned some of the Christian academies. My daughter went to David Lipscomb back when it was David Lipscomb. I think they dropped the David. Did they take up on the voucher program? Did they accept any students?
I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
Hey, Representative Clemens, do you think this is going to pass? My friend and rep over there in Lewisburg, Warner, Todd Warner, he's against it. Vehemently against it. There's no private schools in Marshall County, by the way. Is this going to? What's the outlook on this moving forward? Is it up, down? What are we looking at?
I think it's got a tough road to go, but I've said that before, and things have miraculously passed. I'll tell you this: if it passes, it'll probably be after the filing deadline, and it'll pass after the budget in the dead of night when you're all sleeping.
I got you.
The deal's going to be cut. When nobody's paying attention, that's my prediction.
Hey, I appreciate you coming on, Representative Clemens. You really helped us out, shed some light on it. I mean, we needed that light. Thank you.
Right, Representative, thank you.
Thank you, Rip.
It's refreshing to try to let us all talk. So, anyway.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. You can.